episode 593 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and yes, the ads for Florence Tourism just keep rolling in.
Gary, are you there?
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and jewelry might be nice, but I really don't want people putting anything in my ear.
Yeah, and well, if we can keep our timeline straight for this episode, we might be in good shape, but obviously we're still reeling from not being quite sure what year we're in. Thanks, Wayward Pines. Anyway, I think that once again we're going to agree that this particular set of episodes to discuss is once again fairly appropriate in terms of the what shows are on top and what shows are on bottom. But... Edmund, before we go any further than that, why don't you go ahead and give us a disclaimer?
Absolutely. We will discuss whatever we like about these episodes, including all those things that will spoil you horribly if you haven't seen them. But as always, we try and make sure we've given you at least a week or so to catch up.
That's right. And we are going to go ahead and start, as usual, with this episodic discussion with the bottom three for the week. And once again, we actually have a show that managed to get below the average mark. Three guesses which one that is. The first two don't count. But interestingly enough, while there are some familiar faces down here on the bottom three, we have a show that was in the top three last week, dipping back down. And this would be Sense8, Season 1, Episode 5, Art is Like Religion. Leto experiences PMS via Sun. Sun has a difficult decision to make. Kala is getting married when the proceedings are interrupted by a visit from Wolfgang. If that's what you want to call it. Yeah, this one came in at an average of 7.5, and I'm sure that my particular score was a big part of that. I thought that this was a big kind of step down. I felt like things didn't quite work nearly as well this time around, and it felt like there were some things thrown in more for shock value than it was for actual plot necessity. I'm not sure if that was JMS or if it was the Wachowskis, but... Edmund, you seem to like this one a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, I guess at this point, even though I'm in this odd position of where I actually have managed to keep up with just sort of watching them weekly, but I'm getting quite invested in the characters. So even though this was certainly a bit of a step down, I did drop it, I think, half a point from last week, but I was was still intrigued enough with finding out about these folks that even though there wasn't as much going on in terms of advancing their connections in the plot, it was still grabbing me enough with the character study aspect of it.
I'm definitely feeling now, as we are approaching the midpoint for the show, or kind of at the midpoint, that it's, I can see why there are people that struggle with this. Maybe it's a little bit easier as you go episode, as you watch, if you were to binge watch it, to excuse or gloss over some of these things. But I think even if you were to binge watch it, I can see how this kind of slow burn could be a bit of a challenge for some people. I see where it's going. I see what they're trying to do. And this episode does kind of take that whole interconnectivity thing to a new level, but I still feel like it's a little bit slow at times. That said, they can have Riley sit there and smile at the camera all they want to. I'll watch that for a half hour. No problem. She definitely is, I don't know. There's just like, maybe it's that Scandinavian thing that her character has going, but she just kind of sits there and serenely smiles at the camera. You just feel a little happy. I don't know. Her character doesn't do very much right now, so that's all I've got for it. All right, well, moving on then to another show that is still kind of falling into our bottom three, and I'm not sure exactly what it needs to do to kick back up, but maybe we talked about it a little bit last time. Dark Matter, episode, or season one, episode four. Episode four. The past comes back to haunt members of the crew during a stopover at a space station, during which four makes a stunning discovery, while two and five learn that some games of chance come with surprising risks. Elsewhere, six receives some unwanted attention at a local clinic, and one in three's attempts to sell the weapons in their cargo hold lands them at a dangerous disadvantage. And this one came in at an average of 7.17, so a little bit of a drop from the previous week. And Gary, even you kind of struggled with this one a little bit, it seems.
Well, yeah, it's the same weakness as we described in the last episode, minus the less of the hard science fiction that pulled it up for me last week. but this one, it almost seemed like they wanted us to learn more, you know, have a better sense of the characters, but they didn't bother to show us anything. we talk about them needing to maybe give us a little bit more history on the people, some background, a new skills to show up or something like that, and we still didn't get really any of that. It's just sort of going through, and I'm not even sure why these people are still together at this point, unless there's some other psychological conditioning in effect. I would have thought at this point they would have just split up, but no, they're staying together. But geez, please, they need to tell us something. This going through this through the motions of space pirates just without actually pirating just doesn't really do me any good. Please don't have the ship break down again. Thank you.
I did find the whole idea that they may be kind of clones that were supposed to be gone after the mission was over, but are now living on past their usual end date. If that's the direction they go, this could get very interesting. Because you'd almost have two sets of characters played by the same people that you could explore. But yeah, this is still continuing this slow introduction of these characters, and they're still such a cipher that I think the writers are banking on the mystery of these characters being compelling enough a little bit too much.
Yeah.
And mystery and blank slate are two different things.
Yes. Indeed. The amazing thing is that one of the characters isn't even supposed to be one of these blank slates, and we still don't know anything about her. But anyway. And then, finally, our third show here at the bottom three is, again, a familiar face. Falling Skies, Season 5, Episode 2, Hunger Pains. An unexpected skitter attack leaves the second mass without food, triggering a desperate mission to find supplies. Meanwhile, Maggie makes false promises to protect the second mass, and it's discovered the Ashveni have created the hybrid being... A hybrid being that's part Ashveni, part Skitter, part Hornet, and part human. It's bad enough they have Ashveni in here so often without leaving words out of the recap. Anyway, this one came in at an average of 6.75, which I think is a little bit better than last week. I'll just say that this rose to average for me because there were some pretty nice battle scenes, and it was a little harrowing to see that many aliens attacking at once, but that was about it. Edmund, you gave this 6.5?
Yeah, I gave this a 6.5, and because for one thing, it's, you know, I mean, yes, this is where we're getting more, you know, we're getting more of the, oh, Tom's bloodthirsty and something's wrong with him, which is the recycled elements, and okay, you've been this brilliant fighting force that's managed to survive all this time, and you put all your food in one place? Really?
Remember, Tom is supposed to be a military historian.
Yes.
And they're a total war now.
Yes.
They're not letting up. They're going to keep attacking nonstop until they're done.
Yes. Now that the majority of their forces have left, those who are still behind are going to go into a total war mode because now they are at a disadvantage. Let's go ahead and do it now. These are the issues that we've mentioned before. The show just seems to be... It wants to be something that it's not at this point. But I have this still sick fascination with how it's going to all end.
Yeah. Or not.
There's still some episodes left.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Then let's once again go from our bottom three to switching to far better material. Although this time around, it seems like we're not reaching quite the heights that we have in previous weeks. Things that usually would be in the middle of the pack have risen to the top this time. So, not sure. A little bit of a weaker batch of episodes, it seems. But anyway, our number three show for the week is Humans, Season 1, Episode 2. Episode 2. This is going to get real old.
Yeah.
Anyway, Niska, for just a second there, I thought I had somehow gotten a Firefly episode reference, and it was really messing with my head. Niska stages a brutal escape from the brothel, and Leo's secret is revealed. Meanwhile, George is horrified to be given a new synth, Vera. Well, yes, because she's like Nurse Ratchet. I would be scared, too. This episode got an average of 8. And Yeah, I mentioned before that, you know, you see these characters that are very familiar. And it was this episode where I suddenly realized that I recognized the actress that plays Niska as being the lead character in a period show called The White Queen that was on a couple years ago. And boy, did that mess with my head, too. Because it's like, wait, she was Lady Jane Grey, and now she's a synth prostitute. Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. But yeah, things are getting darker.
Yeah, and I liked the way they're parsing out and sort of giving us the background on these special synths, you know, I thought they were doing a quite a good job of both fleshing out the world. Sorry, I couldn't resist that one. but at the same time, still keeping the plot moving forward. And of course, the big reveal at the end which they put right at the top of the recap. But even though it's right at the end that you find out that Leo, who seems to be their human protector, has got wiring inside. So that was certainly a twist that I know when I first saw it, I didn't see it coming. So you know, obviously this time around, I knew we'd be finding out quite soon. But between overarching plot and then the continuing adventures of William Hurt, and I will say that they've sort of conflated a couple of the plot lines into William Hurt's character, and I think that may be part of the what you were feeling from the first episode, and that whole subplot was more of a sort of standalone sort of comic relief, except for of course the hideous prospect of having a nursemaid like that. So I'm kind of intrigued at how they're going to put those together.
Yeah, I think too that William Hurt just has a particular type of acting style that he tends to have a very slow burn into a character, and I'm feeling that right now, that it's maybe it's the writing is not as distinct for that character because they're still trying to figure out how to, like you said, conflate things together, but I feel like almost his style is still not quite meshing with the show either. I definitely get why they cast him because, you know, name recognition and all that, but yeah. Anyhow, let's see. In our number two slot, hey, this is very familiar to last week, our number two slot, we have a certain culinary expert here, Edmund.
Yes, this would be this is Hannibal, season 3, episode 5, Contorno. The hunt for Hannibal heats up as Crawford and Potsy seek clues that will lead them to Hannibal's location elsewhere. Will and Chioi journey to Florence in a quest to track down Hannibal, and Alana continues to work with Mason Verger. This one I gave an 8-2, so yeah, a little bit of a drop again for me anyway. I would have been intrigued to see what Bronze Thumb's feelings were. For me, for a show that yes has always been stylized and sort of over the top, the suspension of disbelief was getting strained a little bit too much for me. It was still enjoyable, and certainly there's a huge fight between Jack and Hannibal it was very satisfying to see, but at the same time you knew that unlike the massacre at the end of season 2, where you really couldn't be sure who was going to survive or not, this is a case of you kind of know both of them are going to. To me, I mean, especially the fact that this is the episode where Potsy's demise from the books is actually played out, I will admit, a cute little tongue-in-cheek nod to the Hannibal Lecter from the films when Hannibal does. truss him up on a furniture dolly, just like Anthony Hopkins was. But this was the first time I kind of felt like the show was verging into that that sort of over the top territory that the later novels entered into, and it was not quite as satisfying much in the way the not quite as bad as some of those later novels got, but verging into the similar territory, and making it a little bit harder to sort of accept that any of this makes sense. But
That's worrying, let's put it that way. But we shall see. I mean, yeah. Clearly the season is doing so well right now that one or even a half of one and a half episodes aren't necessarily an indication. But to go from a perfect episode to, you know, maintain it from there.
Yes.
As we've seen, the last two have been a little bit lower.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, they're certainly with the way things wound up, I think the intention, you know, is that they are getting more towards the Red Dragon plot line. So I think this may have been sort of getting some of that stuff from the later books out of the way since they decided to go to Florence, and I'm hoping they get back to the more intriguing material.
Mm-hmm. Well, it probably would have been the show that was in our number one slot if it wasn't for the fact that Defiance, of all shows, jumped up to number one. And I think it's safe to say that this was on the shoulders of Jamie Murray. Let's go ahead and do the recap here. Defiance, Season 3, Episode 5, History Rhymes. Amanda and Doc Yule must enlist the Omek for help rescuing Nolan and Ariza, who have fallen into an unexpected and potentially fatal tour of their own past. Meanwhile, Daytac and Stama prepare a decisive move against General Ramtok, leader of the Votanus Collective. And yes, this came in at an average of 8.25, and I'm not kidding when I say that a good half point or more is solely on Jamie Murray and the... I don't even know how they skirted the standards scenes that were in this episode. I honestly don't know.
Yes,
I'm pretty sure that there was like a fish scale maybe in her outfit.
Somewhere, yes,
it's
funny because off air between episodes we were talking about fan service in relation to anime, and this is actually throughout the last couple of seasons of Defiance, Jamie Murray has been kind of walking a similar path for Defiance in live action, but it is also, of course, you know, it is also in the service of the plot and the sort of dance of betrayal or collaboration that's been going on between her and our Omek leader has been rather intriguing. I mean, so, you know, going from this assassination attempt that he just literally laughs off as revealed that yes, he's very, very old, and for this race, that means that he's virtually indestructible. So, which is making the fact that there are only two of them is making that making it much more ominous. And then also, I really liked the way they used Nolan and Arissa's little journey into their own heads and into their past. It was one of those cases of using these flashbacks for some rather intriguing character revelations, and then of course this little bit of a twist where they're all ready to part ways after what they've learned, except that tech in your head means you literally can't separate.
Well, I guess that's going to make things interesting for the writing staff, that's for sure. But yeah, I liked their little tour of the past. I know there are some people that can't stand Ariza, but I actually like her as a character, and I do like this weird kind of history that they have. It is a little quirky, but yeah, this episode soared on the wings of fan service. I mean, there's no other way to put it. It was obvious that, I mean, they all but told you when you came back from the commercial break, yeah, guys, this is going to be a sex scene. You're going to like it. Pretty much everyone's going to like this. just sit back and enjoy. And but even still, by the standards of sci-fi, I was just kind of taken aback. I mean, it was like, wow, really? That, and she must work out an awful lot. Anyway, it was definitely it was a boost to Defiance, but I don't want to give the impression that it was the only thing that the episode had going for it. That's why I mentioned again the character exploration. Edmund, you made a really good point about the fact that there's two of these Omek that are practically indestructible, and they're threatening, maybe not to anyone's real awareness yet, but they know that they plan to unleash many, many more.
Right. Yeah.
And yeah. We're looking at, you know, Defiance is looking at the threat of the Votanis Collective, while meanwhile they have a much bigger problem right in their midst, and people have been trying to warn them. And yeah, it's like bad timing for everything.
Yeah, yeah, and also, I mentioned this when we were talking about the last episode, but sort of fan service aside, I mean, some of the acting on this show, I mean, you know, Jamie Murray and Tony Curran, I mean, as the TARS, I thought have been extremely strong. I really like the way they've been developing Doc Yule, especially with the new sort of twist on her species that was introduced with the Omek coming in, part of the reason why she's so cynical is we were basically her species have just used for body parts. And there's been some, you know, it's a case of having some excellent actors, but being given a little bit more to do than some of the other sci-fi offerings on the same night.
Indeed. But that's our top three for this week. So now we are going to move into the rest of the content, which is all relatively confined to about 7.5 to 8.0. So like I said, a little bit lower than our mid-range has been for a while, and not all that far removed from our top episodes. So a strange week. But anyway, we're going to go ahead then and move into Jonathan Strange and Mr. Normal.
They're getting closer to that territory, but no, it's not.
They are. It's not quite yet, though.
Not Doc Strange yet. No.
No. Season 1, Episode 4, All the Mirrors of the World. Returned from war, Jonathan Strange joins Mr. Norrell to try and cure England's Mad King George III, but is frustrated at Norrell's refusal to discuss the magic and legends of old times. Meanwhile, unbeknownst to the magicians, the gentleman embarks on a scheme to capture Arabella and destroy Jonathan Strange. And this one came in at an 8, so it could have been our number 3 if it wasn't for the fact that Humans is a little bit more of an ongoing show at this point, hopefully. Anyway, it was kind of a flip of the coin. This could have easily been our number 3 show for the week. And Edmund, I know we haven't talked about it too much, but one thing that is definitely making this show work so well is that character of the gentleman is so creepy.
Oh yes,
like just disturbing, and it's largely just on the mannerisms of the actor playing the role.
Mm-hmm.
And talk about that whole uncanny valley thing that you mentioned for Humans.
Yeah,
same thing here. It's probably less special effects than practical effects, but there's just something about him that's off.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very intentional and it's working really well.
Yeah, and certainly, I mean, this was the episode that was really bringing to the fore those conflicts that were being seeded from the previous episode with Jonathan Strange, finding the hidden worlds behind the mirrors, making his break from Norrell, and of course, as they say, unbeknownst to him, not knowing that the creature that Norrell has unleashed is actually working to take him down and steal his wife, and even kill the king if he can get away with it. But I thought it was a nice example there of yes, obviously if Strange wasn't willing to delve into those forbidden realms as far as Norrell's concerned, the king would be dead already. So in terms of the number of episodes, I think they're basically right at halfway here. And was certainly setting up the conflict to play out down the road.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. And let's see. Next on the list, come on now, is Gary. Why don't you go ahead and take this next one?
Sure. We're talking about Killjoys, Season 1, Episode 3, The Harvest. A warrant to retrieve a missing migrant worker on Leith isn't as simple as it seems when the Killjoys discover something dangerous lurking beyond the edge of a farm. Meanwhile, a psych exam brings into question whether Davin is mentally fit to do the job. This came in at a 7.83, with me being the lowest person.
part of, yeah. Why don't you go ahead and get into your reasons for this being your, or you having the lowest score this time around?
Well, the whole Davin plot was a little tedious for me, and of course he was going to get passed sooner or later anyway. The whole issue of and I'll blank out on his name, the one guy retrieving the bounty they were after, I was sort of disappointed. It seemed much more a standalone episode for that guy, more so than a teamwork episode. And at episode 3, I don't need the solo stories just yet. I'd rather keep seeing a more tight group dynamic occur than what I felt we saw in this episode.
Yeah, I still gave it an 8 because I enjoyed it, but I was resisting the urge to start singing The Hero of Canton at some point in this episode. Because this felt so much like it could have been just like stuff happening on the other side of the planet while Mal and them were dealing with Canton. I mean, you had the downtrodden workers that were basically wage slaves. You had, the prominent female character kind of playing the companion-esque role at some point. It was very familiar. And again, I feel like the show is almost playing on that familiarity a little too much. I wasn't nearly as down on the whole other subplot with the Doctor and the psych eval. I knew, yeah, again, this was one of those things where you knew exactly where it was going to go. But I kind of liked the idea that it kind of proved out that in this particular world, even the official part layer of the world is rife for bribery and networking, extortion, and everything else. And, you know, she was willing to play him and express her interest as needed, just as much as he was doing the same thing to her. And I kind of like the fact that it shows that, yeah, there are officials and authorities and stuff, but there's also a well-understood layer of how you get around it. That part was kind of fleshing things out a little bit, but no, I still get your point. And I once again say that this show is, it earned a little bit of goodwill based on the fact that I really enjoy the characters, but it's not going to stay there forever if they don't fix this world building problem. Edmund, how about you?
Yeah, no, I can see both of your points, and I think, yeah, I was verging on the 8 as well as you, John, primarily because even though it's only the third episode, and again, I think it is a matter of it being contrasted with Dark Matter, of where I just I am enjoying the characters more. I feel like I'm getting enough little bits and pieces about their backstory getting spooled out I'm giving them a little benefit of the doubt for now, but you're right, they do need to start building it up a little bit more and a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. Gary, why don't you take the next one too, since this is one that you watched?
Yeah, absolutely. We're talking about The Last Ship, season 2, episode 4, Solace. Chandler sees an opportunity to add another vessel to the fleet when a hospital ship is discovered at sea waiting for Dr. Scott's cure. But tensions rise when Chandler and his team aboard ship go about facing an unforeseen enemy. This came in at a 7.83. Mm-hmm. With John being the lowest. John, why did you think this show sucked so bad?
That's exactly what that means.
Yes.
I'm not sure what exactly it was about this episode in particular, other than... again, it kind of felt like it was obvious where things were going here. And there were a couple moments where I felt like it was slightly contrived. It may be that I'm still also getting a little bit used to this particular season, but it's still very entertaining. It's just, I don't know that it's quite as strong as it was the first season, and it's still trying to find its footing on this new kind of status quo that it's created for itself. But I mean, 7.5 is surely not bad. I know, I do the same thing to you all the time, so it's your turn.
Yeah, but I thought this had a few strong points and some weak points. I definitely like the idea that they're not resting on their laurels at this point. They still, even though the cure is starting to spread, there's still a lot of work to do just because they've gotten out some samples and ways to make it. That doesn't mean that every lab they sent the instructions is going to actually be able to reproduce the vaccine. You know, it's not it's still not cookie cutter science. You have a lot of people who aren't actually specialists that are going to try and start mass producing the vaccine. And it's, I imagine there's going to be failures. So they're trying to figure out how they who are successful can start to produce a higher quantity of it. And so they go after the ship. So I think that makes a certain amount of sense. And like I said, I'm glad that they're actively doing something about the cure. It's not that it's been found and they don't have to do anything else with it. No, they still have to keep spreading it and making it and getting it to places. So I like that. Where I scratch my head is, they're in Norfolk. That's the largest naval base in the world. There's no other ship that could possibly be pulled into service, even though obviously a hospital ship would have some specialties. I would still think that when you wouldn't want to go searching through the Atlantic Ocean to try and find the ship when you have resources at your availability in Norfolk itself. So.
Yeah, I wonder if that's also something that was in the back of my mind. Because, like I said, it does seem like it's taking a little bit of time to come together on the level that I was expecting it to. And it's not like the season is very long, so it doesn't have a huge amount of time to get there. But there we are. It's still up towards the above average mark, so it's not exactly doing poorly.
Yeah, I mean,
go ahead, Edmund.
One thing I'll just chime in on was, I gave it an 8 as well, like Gary, and because I did find the even though the sort of the ship at siege was a little bit cookie cutter, I still think they felt they did it well. I was a little bit taken aback at the introduction of this new big bad, I'm wondering about that shift. Certainly after the introduction of the Russians last season, them sort of going in a more sort of criminal, fanatical direction. I suspect, I'm thinking about it. I don't know if it has anything to do with the infamous budgetary considerations that it costs a lot more to have a other naval vessels around that they have to bring in. It did work for me. I mean, as an introduction of that element, even though once you realized that was going on, that was another case of where you knew they weren't going to get everybody. Somebody was going to get away, so they can come back to be their nemesis down the line.
Hmm. Yeah, you know that they are, right. So there's that whole subplot burning in the background. That, yeah, I'm wondering where that's going. Now, Edmund, you're going to have to take the next one.
This is where True Detective has landed this time. Season 2, Episode 3, Maybe Tomorrow. Annie lets Ray know she's in charge after he goes rogue on the investigation, even though he stumbles on crucial evidence that takes the case in a new direction. Meanwhile, Frank meets with his former associates in the criminal underworld, but they make it clear they're not taking orders from him anymore. And Paul hits the streets to see if Casper's face rings a bell. And this ticked up a bit for me. I gave it a 7.5. After the shocking revelation that Colin Farrell was just hit with riot shot, not with full shotgun shells, which is why he was able to miraculously rise off of the floor. But once we got through that, which did have a rather wonderfully bizarre opening with his dad, where you think he's just getting an introduction to the afterlife via a Elvis impersonator and Robert Forster's dad sitting in the booth across from him at the bar that's been one of their major settings. But once he does recover and get bandaged up, they do actually start getting into the investigation again. So that did improve things from the previous episode. But it's still certainly compared to the heights, certainly of the early episodes from the first season, they ain't coming close to that. And the whole Vince Vaughn side of things is just not really grabbing me. It's just feeling very cookie cutter, sort of compromised criminal businessman, which we, you know, because yes, they say they aren't going to take orders from him. So of course he just gets into a big squab, as he says, with the main rebel associate, and gives him a beat down, and you know, of course, reestablishes his dominance and territory, and we've really seen that before.
Well, there you go. All right, and next on the list we have, coming down a little bit from its initial heights, Mr. Robot, Season 1, Episode 2, Ones and Zeros, .mpeg. Come on. Elliot is torn between accepting a job offer from an evil corporation and joining the F Society hacker group. Maybe. And this one came in at an average of 7.5. So, like I said, it kind of wasn't as strong as the opener was, but I think that it carried forward some of those threads pretty well. I just don't know that it was as strong in terms of the look into or the insight into Elliot's mind space. Would you what would you say about this one, Edmund?
Yeah, I think that's fair. It you know, they were trying to get more into the sort of the nuts and bolts of the plot, so it didn't have quite that quite as much of that ethereal, how much of it's in his head quality, of the first episode, and then certainly that whole you have to call it a cliffhanger ending, I guess. did feel like it was going more for shock value than for any good reason other than like oh let's try this. So you know the jury will have to be out on that until we see exactly how he picks himself up off those rocks in the next episode.
Indeed. If he can.
Yeah.
And finally we have, and we kind of got started on this one, sorry if I spoiled anything for you out there, but Wayward Pine, Season 1, Episode 7, Betrayal. Ethan finds a bomb planted in his car, which leads him to question people he thought he could trust. Kate and Harold discuss their fertility issues with Nurse Pam. Ben's relationship with Amy heats up, and so on and so forth. We've heard this before, unfortunately. Yeah, this one came in at a 7.5, and yeah, again, it seems like after they had that mid-season reveal, the show, it's not quite as, I don't know, it is missing a little bit something here on the back end.
Yeah, and I mean, in this episode, yes, after Ethan's sort of apparently complete buy-in from last episode, you know, now they're introducing the possibility of, oh no, this is really just a government experiment. But my main problem is they are lapsing into tell don't show. So you know, here we have Kate just coming right out and saying it, rather than, you know, no, having things play out and having us just get intimations one way or the other. And then I just found the whole end a bit ridiculous, in terms of, you know, yes, there's this bomb in the music box, and then it finally goes off, and it's supposed to take down, you know, apparently I think it was supposed to take down the wall, and instead it just barely damages the truck, and the two poor kids in the back who, you know, I thought they were actually going to kill them off, or maybe they, well, apparently have killed off the son, maybe, who knows. But yeah, I mean, after that whole build up to it, and then it was just kind of this damp squib going off. So that,
yeah,
that,
right,
yeah,
just, yeah, that's exactly what the weird part about it is that, yeah, they go through this big thing of how dangerous this bomb is going to be, and then it might as well have been a cherry bomb in a toilet.
Yeah.
But anyhow, yeah, that's it for this particular week. A little bit of a shorter list. Not much, but a little bit. And yeah, what do you guys think? You know, certainly we have a similar list coming for this for next week, as we are now pretty well established in our summer season. Maybe a couple premieres left to go here and there. One in particular we talked about a couple shows back. But anyway, Gary, what are your last thoughts for this week?
I like that sci-fi has put some real science fiction shows back into their schedules. And while I can't call any of them amazing, I think they're definitely in the right direction, and I hope they can keep picking up as the season goes through.
Mm-hmm. Edmund, how about you?
Yeah. Well, one thing I've been rather amazed by, and it's actually just a continuation of the last couple of years. But no, we are reaching this point where I'm actually starting to look forward to some of these summer shows more than the regular season. And certainly, I mean, it's that trend that Mad Men kind of pioneered of debuting a more serious shows in the summer, and as opposed to where summer used to be, you know, where USA would, discovered, they could put out things like Burn Notice and give people sort of more like guilty pleasure shows in the summer. I've now reached the point where, Graceland, which had been one of my sort of USA summer shows, but now is getting ridiculous to the point of pointlessness for me. And with some of the other things that are now coming out, certainly with things like Humans Rectify has just returned on Sundance for, which is probably now the example of a show that is extremely sophisticated and deep character study. I mean, as usual, I think they've gone back to 6 episodes, which means we'll probably be basically looking at another week in the life of these characters. but something I've been looking forward to all year, and it's rather intriguing how not only is the TV season going full year and all around the calendar now, but the time when you'd one time you'd relax is actually giving us or giving me anyway some of our more challenging fare.
I can't disagree. I really was worried that there wasn't going to be a whole lot to watch over the summer. Not really worried, but more thinking, oh, we'll be going into maybe some catch up on other things type of mode. But I find that I'm still very engaged with what's on this summer. I wouldn't mind if it kind of maintained this level of pacing as far as throughout the year, not necessarily have to overwhelm with a huge amount of material, but just have a really good solid slate 12 months out of the year. I know it's asking for too much, but there we are. All right, that's it for this particular week. Next week, we will be back, of course, with a lot of news coming out of San Diego Comic-Con, and then a little bit more typical slate of episodic discussion. So until next time.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as Fair Use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.